Hello. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. We're going to talk this hour about something that has been on top of many people's minds, but in a very specific way. The energy policy of the United States of America was a big part of this presidential campaign. Independence from oil and foreign oil was a big part of the campaign, this presidential election that elected President Barack Obama to be the next president of the United States of America. You know, when we turn on our lights every day, we just flick on those switches or turn on our electric stove or turn on the electric heat, it all seems so clean and easy and nice. But where does that electricity come from? How do we get it? What's the origin of it? Most of us don't know. We've been doing shows about this issue for a long time, and we started by doing shows on a thing called mountaintop removal, MTR, mountaintop removal. Many people in this country don't know what mountaintop removal means or even what it is, because it's not something that the press covers very much. It's not something that we think about very much. There's a website, by the way, I'm going to tell you about right now, a number of websites you can learn about during the course of this hour. This one's called ilovemountains.org. ilovemountains.org. Just click it on if you're by your computer right now, and you don't have to love mountains to be interested in this website. If the suburbs and the streets are where you're more comfortable, just click on ilovemountains.org, and you'll see right there where you can click in your zip code. And when you click in your zip code, it's going to tell you how your life in your zip codes connected to the destructions of the oldest mountains in the United States of America, the Appalachian Mountains, that run from New York to Georgia. We're going to talk about that and a great deal more this hour. And you can join us here when you're ready at 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We have with us in the studio Dave Cooper, who's been writing to us by email for some time. He's host of the Mountaintop Removal Roadshow, which you can find at mountainroadshow.com. And he did a show in College Park, Prince George's County, yesterday, and came up to Baltimore to join us live in the studio today. Dave, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
And joining us from West Virginia is Laura Lee Scarborough. And Laura Lee was on our show months back at another radio station when we first broached the idea of mountaintop removal with our listeners. She's a community organizer for the Coal River Mountain Watch, and she's working on the Coal River Wind Farm Project. And you can check that out, by the way, at www.coalriverwind.org. It's fascinating. You can check that out. And Laura Lee, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thanks, Mark.
Pleasure to hear your voice again.
Good to talk to you. It was a year ago, right after Thanksgiving, that we were up in Baltimore.
Is that when it was?
Mm-hmm. It's been almost a year.
Almost a year. Well, I'm glad to have you back on with us.
Thank you.
Let's talk a bit about what this is and what's going on. And I let me play something to get a sense of what we're talking about here. It's a very small clip. Earlier this year, when we were beginning our new life here at WEAA, one of my producers, Justin Levy, went down to West Virginia with Andrew McCluskey and to go down to West Virginia to see mountaintop removal for himself and to bring stories back so we could share these with you. You can go to our website at centerforemergingmedia.org and see all the pictures you want of mountaintop removal and of the people's lives there that Justin took and audio that we have. And what you're going to hear now is a man named Larry Gibson. Larry Gibson is from a place called Cayford Mountain, West Virginia. He's fought for 20 years to save that mountain and his family secretary on the top of that mountain from mountaintop removal. And our producer, Justin Levy, met him there last spring and took this interview down. They walked through the woods to the edge of a cliff, looking down over this vast mining site where a taller mountain peak once stood. Yes, a taller mountain peak once stood. It's hard to imagine, but we're going to talk about this a bit later in the program, that mountaintop removal to get the coal to make your electricity. They go on mountains and take off the tops of mountains and then leave the sludge to destroy the land and the people's lives all around them. And you'll hear the wind cutting through this bare patch of land now, and you can see it if you go to steinershow.org and can see the picture we're talking about. But let me play this short piece with Larry Gibson, a man who's been fighting mountaintop removal for 20 years and will do it to the day he dies. This is Larry Gibson from Cayford Mountain, West Virginia.
I can let you walk through my woods here, and you can hear the land talking to you, the critters moving and scampering back and forth, and the birds chirping. I want to take you over here less than 2 minutes away. Let you look on a mountaintop removal site and you'll see why I call it Hell's Gate. Nothing can live over there. You can walk through here and you can listen to the land talk to you. Over here on a Sunday when it ain't doing anything, I can walk you all day on a mine site. All you're going to hear is your heartbeat. You won't hear no animals scampering or no birds chipping or no squirrels scratching. No. Come on through.
All right.
I believe in my heart and my soul that if people understood the full extent of what's going on here, that they would choose not to let it happen. Right now we lose 1,500 men to black lung a year to the industry, 1,500 men. And then now we're losing 300 more people, men and women and children, a year just simply by living in the coal fields, related diseases linked to coal. So that's 1,800 people, over 1,800 people a year that are dying for this type of energy. They call it cheap energy. Ask one of the people that lost somebody in their family from this type of cheap energy and see what they think about it being cheap energy. You know, once you're dead, you're dead, never to come back. What they're trying to do is displace the people of Appalachia off the mountains. You know, when I told people I was not displaced here, I chose to be here. I don't need any help getting off these mountains. I need help staying on them. That's what I need. So remember, the people in that's going to hear your voice, hear your radio station. Again, I say to you, with all heart and all sincerity, what do you hold so precious to your own circle of life that what would you do to stand for it? And there would be no price for it. What would you do? For me, I'm willing to pay the ultimate price. I fully expect to lose my life doing what I do here. And if I get up tomorrow and I'm still alive, I want another day. Coal going $80 a ton, $60 to $80 a ton, and we're taking over $5 million of the coal out this one hauler every day, and they're telling me my land's worth $650 million by the end of this year. How much do you think my life is worth right now? Not very much.
That was the voice of Larry Gibson, who's been fighting mountaintop removal in his own home for 20 years. And we are joined in studio by Dave Cooper, host of the Mountaintop Removal Roadshow, and Lorella Lee Scarborough, who lives in West Virginia, who has been fighting this for a long time. She's a community organizer for Coal River Mountain Watch and works for the Coal River Wind Farm Project. And Dave and Lorella Lee, could you talk a bit about, let's define what mountaintop removal is for people who are kind of just tuning in and maybe not heard the last shows we've done and what this all means. And Dave, if you describe it from your perspective as somebody who's come in and started to fight against it, then I want to hear Lorella describe it from a woman's perspective who's been fighting it from the ground up for a long, long time.
Well, most people, when they think of coal mining, they think of underground mining, and that is still going on today. But the coal companies have found it more profitable to actually blow the entire top of the mountain up. They'll take as much as 600 to 800 feet off the top of the mountain. They use an explosive material called ANFO, which is ammonium nitrate and fuel oil. It's the same thing that Timothy McVeigh used in the Oklahoma City bombing. Just by comparison, Timothy McVeigh used 4,000 pounds of explosives to blow up the federal building in Oklahoma City. Every day, coal companies use 4 million pounds. So it's like 1,000 Oklahoma City bombs going off every day. They take the top of the mountain, completely turn it into a rubble pile. Then that waste material, the waste rock and debris, is dumped into the valleys between the mountains, and that's called a valley fill. And these valley fills are very, very controversial because what's at the bottom of the valley fill is the mountain stream, which is the headwater drinking streams for millions of people that live downstream. I grew up in Cincinnati, which is on the Ohio River. The Ohio River comes out of the Appalachian Mountains. Now, instead of having pure mountain spring water being the headwater drinking streams for the Ohio River, you've got water running off of a mine site. It has a lot more pollution in it, has a lot more sediment, it has a lot more heavy metals. So this mountaintop removal doesn't just affect the people that live in Appalachia. It affects millions of people that live downstream.
Lorella?
Well, Dave is certainly right. The fact of the matter is we all live downstream, and what they put in the streams in Appalachia is certainly going to eventually affect us all. The Coal River that runs by my house runs into the Kanawha River, Kanawha into the Ohio River, Ohio into the Mississippi, Mississippi into the Gulf. It's evaporated, and then it comes back down. So what they put in the water here is certainly going to eventually affect us all. Let me say that Larry Gibson certainly is one of my heroes. He lives about 20 miles from my home, and he has spent a very, very long time guarding the 50 acres of the Stanley Ayers Park on top of that mountain. And in Rock Creek, West Virginia, which is my home, I have about 10 acres here. I come from a long line of coal miners, my father, my grandfather, my husband, my son-in-law, my brothers, all either were or are coal miners. And I watched my husband die of black lung. And it's a very, very long-suffering way to go. And it angers me greatly to know that there are alternatives. There is another way to make a living, that there can be job diversity in the state of West Virginia if the powers that be weren't so single-minded in believing that coal is king and coal is the lifeblood of the state of West Virginia. That angers me to hear that, because the only reason that it is the fact that the politicians and here in southern West Virginia and in the state of West Virginia, we've got the big guns in our arsenal. We have the ranking senator on Capitol Hill. We have the head of the Natural Resources Committee as my congressman. Senator Jay Rockefeller, of course, is one of our senators. And then we have Governor Joe Manchin. And that group of people have power to change life and how it's impacted by coal mining in the state of West Virginia. And they're very, very single-minded, and they refuse to allow any job diversity in here, even though we are proposing a major alternative for the state's energy portfolio. And it's just not being looked at seriously by the powers that be. My 10 little acres here in Rock Creek is threatened as we speak by a 6,600-acre mountaintop removal site that is proposed to come in behind my house. Everything that I have is at risk. There's abundant wildlife here. The bear come down and drag my trash cans off. The deer stroll right into my backyard and eat the fruit off my trees. There's a freshwater stream that runs by my house. My husband's buried in the family cemetery next door. Now, should Massey Energy have their way in doing mountaintop removal by my house, all of that will be destroyed. And Larry Gibson has to sign a release form in order to go to his cemetery and visit his relatives that are buried in the family cemetery on top of Kay Ford Mountain. I'm not sure how well-behaved I'm going to be the day that I have to sign a release form to go visit my husband in the family cemetery. There's something very, very wrong with that.
We're talking about mountaintop removal. It's how we get our electricity. It is destroying the mountains of West Virginia, destroying tens of thousands of people's lives in West Virginia. It is polluting our earth. It's polluting the land. There are cleaner ways for us to get our energy. That's part of what this election was supposed to be about. We're going to talk about that from the perspective of somebody who has a roadshow, who takes it around the country to let college students know what mountaintop removal is, and that's Dave Cooper. And he's here in the studio with us, and we're joined once again by Lorella Scarborough, who is community organizer for Coal River Mountain Watch and has been working on the Coal River Wind Farm Project. We'll talk about some more. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And if you go to ilovemountains.org, just type in your zip code. We'll talk about it in a little bit. Type in your zip code, and you'll see how we're connected directly here in Baltimore, in Maryland, to mountaintop removal, to destruction of those mountains, destruction of people's lives, destruction of our environment, so we can turn a light on. There might be better ways to do that. We're going to talk about that, too. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. Lorella, could you just, I don't want to assume that everybody knows everything. And you talked about your husband dying of black lung disease.
Yeah.
Could you just tell us what that is?
Black lung is when, he spent 35 years as an underground union coal miner. And in the coal fields of southern West Virginia, the coal fields of Appalachia, actually, it's understood, it's a given when you go underground to mine coal, that that's if you live long enough, that's the way you're going to go. And COPD, which is black lung, it totally starves off the oxygen. I watched my husband for several years struggle for every breath, and then there are many people throughout Appalachia that watch their loved ones go that way. And there certainly are alternatives. It's not necessary if the politicians would offer some type of job diversity, then the people that we love would not have to die of black lung.
I'm sorry, Lorella. I appreciate you telling us that. I didn't mean to put you through that. Lorella Scarborough talking with us. This is Dave Cooper talking about mountaintop removal. And one of the things you talked with me about on my show the last time you were here a year ago was let's just for a moment before we talk about the larger energy issues, why the politicians are not fighting it, what the bills are in Congress now, what the alternatives are, and what this wind farm project is that you and other people in West Virginia are fighting to have instead of coal mines. I want to kind of to touch a bit about you and the other women who were in my studio that day talked about when the mountains are cut off, the tops are cut off, and all the scrapple from the mountains are thrown in between the mountains and the valleys, and then that kind of dams up the riverways, and then the water that comes off of cleaning the coal becomes sludge that are in these sludge lakes, hundreds of them throughout West Virginia, and the kind of physical real danger that those lakes of sludge are posing for men, women, and children like you and your neighbors who have to live around them. Talk a bit about that for a moment, so people understand just kind of more graphic detail what we're talking about, what people have to live with in the oldest mountains in America.
Well, throughout Appalachia, there are many, many coal mines, and there are many, many toxic sludge ponds. One that maybe a lot of people have heard of is the 2.8 billion gallon toxic sludge dam that sits high on the mountain above Marsh Fork Elementary School, which is the elementary school where my kids went to school, just a few miles from here. That's held back by an earthen dam. That's 2.8 billion gallons of toxic sludge. And the fact of the matter is that stuff's not going to stay where they put it. It's not going to stay where they put it. And they take the toxic sludge and they also do underground injections. And there are a lot of people throughout Appalachia who their only water source is their well water. And what happens eventually from the toxic sludge is that stuff seeps into the water table. We have people throughout Appalachia who are sick, dead, and dying because their water's been contaminated. And we have someone on staff right now that just as of November the 1st, she has taken a medical leave because she's just not physically able to work. And she spent her life, her married life, raising her children in a community where that exact thing happened. And it just so happened we found the paperwork where they were given a permit to inject this toxic sludge underground. And so now there's about 200 people in that community. 90% of the people in that community don't have gallbladders. Once they started organizing in that community, they realized that a lot of their neighbors had all of the same illnesses. They had kidney failure. They had brain tumors. We had 8-year-old kids passing blood trying to pass kidney stones. There's just so much damage that's done to the people who live here. And for some reason, it's allowed. I mean, I don't mean to sound naive, but I don't understand why, for a greater profit margin, that the coal companies are allowed to intentionally do things that is wiping out, literally wiping out people throughout Appalachia. I don't understand it.
Lorella Scarborough, that's something we're all trying to kind of figure out. And Dave Cooper, I mean, the politics of this is amazing. I mean, the power of coal in this country is overwhelming political power. Their presence at both political conventions, their ability to lobby, their ability to kind of in many ways buy their way into politics. I mean, the power of big coal is something I think people don't understand.
Well, we're hoping that that's going to change with the new Obama administration, but certainly with the Bush administration, the coal companies have gotten just about everything that they wanted We actually won a lawsuit which declared that these valley fills, where the coal companies are dumping their mining waste, the rock and debris, into the streams, that those are illegal, that they violate the Federal Clean Water Act. And that suit was won before a very conservative Republican judge named Charles Hayden. And Charles Hayden was a fly fisherman, and he went out and looked at some of these streams that were being buried beneath these valley fills. And here's what he said after he saw these valley fills. He said, "When valley fills are permitted in intermittent and perennial streams, they destroy those stream segments. If there are fish, they cannot migrate. If there's any life that cannot acclimate to life deep in a rubble pile, it is eliminated. No effect on related environmental values is more adverse than obliteration. Under a valley fill, the water quantity of the stream becomes zero because there's no stream, there's no water quality." And that's a conservative Republican judge, Charles Hayden. When the Bush administration came in, they rewrote the definition of the word fill in the Federal Clean Water Act to allow these coal companies to keep doing these valley fills. We've got a bill in Congress that we're trying to get passed that would undo what the Bush administration did on these valley fills. It's called the Clean Water Protection Act. The House bill is H.R. 2169. And Representative Sarbanes and Representative Cummings here in Maryland have both signed on to this bill. But Representative Ruppersberger and Representative Steny Hoyer have not signed on to this bill yet. And we'd like to encourage them to sign on to it.
Maybe the congressmen who support this Stopping Mountaintop Removal and the congressmen who support the Clean Water Bill that's in Congress now that would attend the amount of pushing the stoppage of this mountaintop removal, this would be, as a step towards it, are, as you just said, Congressman Elijah Cummings, who's been a guest on the show many times, Congresswoman Donna Edwards from Prince George's County, Congressman John Sarbanes from Baltimore City, Baltimore County, and Howard County.
Are all helping to stop mountaintop removal.
And Wayne Gilchrist, who is in his last term as congressman from the Eastern Shore, are all representatives from this state are saying no, it has to stop, and are supporting the bill to kind of force the end of the creating of these pits.
So if people would like to contact Congressman Ruppersberger and Congressman Steny Hoyer and tell them to help stop mountaintop removal by passing the Clean Water Protection Act, that would be a huge help to all the people in Appalachia, like Lorella, who are fighting literally for their lives.
And Lorella Scarborough, I mean, when we talk about it's your fight too, but, you know, when you pollute, people don't realize that when you pollute besides the struggle with your own lives, that you just to be able to breathe and live and have your children not die from these disgusting coal pits that are full of disease that surround where you live, that when they dam up the waters around you, those are the headwaters that all of us on the Eastern Seaboard use for our water.
Right. And about 5 weeks ago, we had a case pending in court here in southern West Virginia, and before we could actually get that case to court, the coal company covered 4.2 more miles of streams before we could ever get them in litigation. And that's what the case was based on. So basically, we had to drop that case because we had no grounds for it, because they informed us that those streams had already been covered. And so what they're doing is they're starving off the headwaters. Now, if we lose 1,200 miles of headwater streams, which we have, what's that going to do to the water supply of all of the really, really bad things that the coal companies do? And they do a lot of bad things. They have a long history of operating outside the law, the blasting every day, the rock dust, the silica that comes from that rock dust. The area where we live is certainly equal to living in a war zone. I mean, we have blasts around us every day. And the rock dust that comes from those blasts puts out silica. And the silica attaches itself to the inside of your lungs, and most of us know silicosis, your lungs are turned to concrete, and you can't breathe. But all of the bad things that they do, the worst of what they do is destroying the water. I've got a 4-year-old granddaughter, and I can't begin to imagine what quality of water she's going to have when she's of childbearing age, because this is not about us. This is about what we're leaving behind, about the next generation. And if we sit by idly and allow them to continue to destroy the mountains and to destroy the water and to destroy the air, what is going to be left for your grandchildren, my grandchildren, and the next generation and the next. And whose responsibility is that?
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about that and what can replace oil, coal. Lorella Scarborough is one of our guests. Cultures from West Virginia. Dave Cooper's with us here in studio. When we come back, we'll talk about that, about wind, about ways of stopping this. People like Lorella are civil rights heroes in their own right, fighting for their lives in West Virginia. We're about to hear a story about a civil rights hero from our past here in Maryland. During this break, when we come back, we'll return to our conversation about mountaintop removal, our lives, and the future of our energy in this country. Stay with us and join us at 410-319-8888. Welcome back. I'm Mark Stein, and we're talking about coal, electric energy from coal, mountaintop removal in West Virginia, its effect on the people who live there, its effect on all of us, and what the coming discussions may be with Barack Obama's administration over what's called clean coal and the future of our electricity. Joining us by phone is Lorella Scarborough, who is a community organizer for Coal River Mountain Watch, and working on the Coal River Wind Farm project. You can check that out at www.coalriverwind.org. She's been fighting mountaintop removal and for her communities for years. Dave Cooper's in the studio. He's the host of the Mountaintop Removal Roadshow that was down in College Park, University of Maryland last night. You can learn more about that at mountainroadshow.com. Let's kind of switch gears here. And I really, folks, I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. This is not some foreign subject from another place. It's our subject that belongs in this community to all of us. And the energy question belongs to all of us. Your thoughts on where we should go with energy tomorrow, the discussions we should be having with a new president of the United States and a new democratically controlled Congress, and where we might take this conversation for the future of America at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So, I mean, well, when you hear all the candidates talk about clean coal. Even Barack Obama talked about clean coal and the belief that clean coal is the answer. There was a op-ed written by former Vice President Al Gore, who ran for president, where he, in the op-ed, said that there is no such thing as clean coal. We don't have the technology. All coal technology is dirty. And pollutes the environment. So let's talk about this question of clean coal and how we get this discussion started and why it's so hard to get it started. Lorella, you want to start off, then we'll go over to Dave.
Sure. I don't believe that there is any such thing as clean coal. In Rock Creek, West Virginia, in Raleigh County, and Boone County, West Virginia, we certainly are at ground zero for mountaintop removal. Unfortunately, there are several ground zeros for mountaintop removal. We're not the only ones that are there. And I have a very good friend that says it doesn't matter if you get marshmallows coming out of those smokestacks. The fact of the matter is the extraction process is filthy. Now, we who live in the coal fields and we live in the shadow and we live with mountaintop removal every day, we understand what the true cost of coal is. And the cost of coal, of course, affects everything in our lives every day. When they pollute the water, when they pollute the air, when they destroy the environment, when they wipe out all of the wildlife and all of the vegetation, all of the ginseng, the hardwood forest, when they destroy everything in their path, and that's exactly what they do with mountaintop removal, everything in their path is annihilated, and what they leave behind is a moonscape. I would maintain that I'll agree with my friend Judy Bonds that it doesn't matter if you get marshmallows or rose petals to come out of those smokestacks. There is no such thing as clean coal.
Dave Cooper?
Yeah, clean coal is an oxymoron. To me, clean coal is like saying diet cheesecake. There is no such thing. What they're referring to is a cleaner way of burning the coal in these power plants. There is better technology that can help filter out more of the pollutants, the mercury especially. But they're hoping for to be able to take the carbon dioxide coming from the smokestacks of these power plants, which is a greenhouse gas, and a lot of concern about that, and taking the carbon dioxide and pumping it underground It's called carbon capture and sequestration. Unfortunately, this technology has not really been invented yet. It's 10 years down the road, at least, some say 20 years, before we're going to be able to do carbon capture and sequestration. What we need to be looking at now is renewable sources of electricity that don't require blowing up mountains, and we don't have to try and figure out ways to pump this carbon dioxide underground. Fortunately, in West Virginia, we have a wonderful resource, an abundant resource, and that's the wind that blows through the mountains.
Well, then why do you think that the Barack Obama campaign supported the idea of clean coal? I mean, and they're still talking about clean coal, even though on a campaign trail, Biden told a campaigner, "We're not supporting clean coal. No coal plants here in America." The overarching theme that we hear is clean coal, and there's a lot of mythology around clean coal. But the coal industry says we're building the technology, we can make it happen. That's the only way to do it. It's the only way we're going to get cheap and fast energy in America is to have what's called clean coal. That this sequestering has to happen. That we got to develop it, or we're not going to have the energy we need.
Well, of course, Senator Obama is from Illinois, which is a coal state, and Illinois was at one time projected to be the location for the Future Gen plant, which was going to be the latest, newest technology plant that would have zero emissions. Unfortunately, the Bush administration pulled the funding on this Future Gen plant, which was going to be in Mattoon, Illinois. I think that Senator Obama was a political decision to try and win over some of the coal states by talking about clean coal. And in Kentucky, some of his campaign literature actually showed pictures of barges of coal going down the Ohio River, and it was all about clean coal. They never seem to show mountains being blown up when they talk about clean coal.
Lorella, when we talk about clean coal again, I mean, because again, this is going to be, we're going to hear this over and over again. It's going to be part of the conversation that's going to take place in America around changing our energy policy. You come from a tradition of coal mining.
Absolutely.
Your entire family was in coal mining.
Yes.
So talk a bit about how that relates to your kind of family traditional way of making a living and the idea there can be no clean coal and we should end coal mining.
Well, I believe, first of all, let me say that I certainly would prefer that we never mine, harvest, burn another lump of coal. Let me say that. But in the reality is that we have to transition from coal to renewables. We can't just stop mining coal. We can stop mountaintop removal today.
Right.
And not dramatically impact the economy of our state and a few others. But we cannot completely stop mining coal today without the bottom falling out of the economic market in the state of West Virginia. And what we need to do, now we hear over and over and over that, you know, wind won't do it all, and solar won't do it all, and hydro won't do it all. Well, you know what? Neither does coal. Coal provides 51% of our nation's energy. It doesn't provide 100% of our nation's energy. And what we need to do today so that the people who live in the coal field still have a way to make a living, can still support their families, can still have good paying jobs with good benefits, is we need to start transitioning to renewables. We need to start transitioning off of coal, because no matter what you believe about how much more coal reserves that we have, the fact of the matter is coal is a finite resource. Someday there will be no more. So we need to start transitioning to renewables, and it'll be the difference between hitting the wall at 55 and hitting the wall at 15. We can make it easier if we start transitioning. We should have started a long time ago, and we're fighting very, very hard, vigorously on the ground every day, uphill, in order to get the state of West Virginia to start transitioning.
We're going to talk about that politics there in a minute, but let's open the phones here. You just heard Lorella Scarborough, who is community organizer for Coal River Mountain Watch. She's been working on the Coal River Mountain, Coal River Wind Farm Project at coalriverwind.org. She's been fighting mountaintop removal for a long time, trying to save her family's life and her land. Dave Cooper is host of the Mountaintop Removal Roadshow. Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Your thoughts on not just mountaintop removal, but on the future of energy in America, where we need to go, how do we get there, and how do we have a dialogue with our politicians to help us get there. 410-319-8888. And Debbie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi to the guest. In answer to the question, you know, why would a campaign like Barack support clean coal? There are two types of pollution that we're talking about. There's the immediate pollution from the way that the mining is done and localized in West Virginia. And that's clearly like an emergency issue that just needs to be handled, period. Whether we use coal or not, it shouldn't be done that way. But the larger issue for the country, and not just for areas around, you know, the Midwest, where you can no longer, you can't fish, you can eat the fish. I mean, Fisherman's Magazines, my dad's a fisherman, he lives in West Virginia. They have lists of lakes where you can't eat certain fish. I mean, when are we going to wake up? The mercury comes from the coal mining, from the electricity produced from coal mines, but go up to Alaska. There's no electric facilities in Alaska producing that mercury. It's going upstream. So on the long term, clean coal is something that has to be addressed, as our guest stated. You know, as we're doing the transition to other types of energy, that's another pollution issue that, you know, we can't fish from our water. And you know, and it comes from that kind of electrical production. And I'll get off the phone.
Well, that's okay, Debbie. Thanks so much for holding on. Thanks for joining us. I think that, I mean, this is going to be a part of it. I think, Lorella, you hit the nail on the head, which is that there has to be a transition in America.
Absolutely.
And it's not going to come overnight. And that I think that's part of the thing people understand also when people from outside say end all coal mining now, is that it's part of a traditional way of life. It's the way men and women make their living in West Virginia, and without that, there'll be no high paying jobs left in West Virginia.
And Mark, you know, I lay that at the feet of the politicians. You know, the only reason that we live in a mono economy in southern West Virginia is the fact that the politicians refuse to allow any job diversity here, because they have too much to gain by supporting the coal industry.
What do you mean by that? Well, now let's talk about the power of, we're talking about the politics and power of coal here. What does that mean, Lorella?
Well, there are heavy donations, of course, to the campaigns by the coal industry. The CEO of Massey Energy, who's the predominant coal producer in my area, for the past couple of elections, not this election, but the two elections prior to, spent millions of dollars buying his own state Supreme Court judge and buying politicians and financing their campaigns to put them in office because they were coal friendly. And so those who would dare oppose him, you know, have to think twice about that, because if they oppose him, if they're in office as a Democrat, for example, the governor of the state of West Virginia, he started out his administration by spending $975,000 fighting the CEO of Massey Energy, and then he decided to put a Friends of Coal sticker on his chest because he decided that wasn't lucrative anymore. So he is coal-friendly. And the politicians, like I said, they have too much to gain by being coal-friendly as opposed to doing the right thing and opposing it.
And I mean, that is what we're talking about here, Dave Cooper. Part of the issue is I mean, the political power of coal is a hard thing for many people to stand up to. Clearly, the politicians in West Virginia can't stand up to it.
Yeah, I would say all of the politicians in the coal states are scared to death of the coal industry. It's a bipartisan problem. In my state of Kentucky, we have Senator Mitch McConnell and Senator Jim Bunning, both very pro-coal. In West Virginia, primarily Democrats. Senator Byrd, of course, and Senator Rockefeller, both Democrats, are very much in favor of mountaintop removal. In southern West Virginia, where this is going on, Congressman Nick Rahal is one of the most outspoken, vehement supporters of mountaintop removal, and it's destroying his part of the state. It's very, very difficult for me to understand how these politicians can stand by and watch their state being destroyed.
410-319-8888 to join in on a conversation here with Lorella Scarborough and Dave Cooper about mountaintop removal and the future of our energy in this country, how it's affecting their homes in Appalachia, but also how it affects our lives every day. 410-319-8888. I see Eric and Scott are calling in. We're going to come to your calls as soon as they get the green light. And while we're waiting to go to Eric, our next caller up, Lorella, to talk about this, the other side of this, I mean, the positive side of this, which is your work and the work of your community members to create this Coal River Wind Farm project, and what it means.
Well, for many years in this struggle to fight against mountaintop removal, the best excuse that the Coal Association had was the fact that we as environmentalists offer no alternative. So we came up with an alternative. And the alternative, of course, is the Coal River Wind Project. Now, this would be, Coal River Mountain, is slated for destruction by mountaintop removal. It's 6,600 acres that they plan to blow the tops off the mountains, and that's right in my backyard. And so what we thought would be a higher and better use for that particular piece of property would be the largest windmill farm on the East Coast. And that would be 220 turbine windmill farm sitting on top of Coal River Mountain. For the mountaintop removal project, they would destroy 6,600 acres in order to erect a 440 megawatt wind mill farm. We would only have to clear 100 acres. 440 megawatts is about the size of a medium coal-fired power plant, so we could replace with that a medium coal-fired power plant. This would certainly offer job diversity in an area that, like I said before, we live in a mono economy. During the construction phase of this particular windmill farm, it would offer 200 locally trained, hopefully union jobs during the construction phase. That's a two-year construction phase. Once the construction phase is over, there would be 40 to 50 permanent jobs. These are jobs you can't outsource because they have to build them right here, and they have to maintain them right here. 40 to 50 permanent jobs. Every 20 to 25 years, those turbines have to be replaced, which is another spike of employment with another 200-plus jobs for the area. So this would, first of all, it would save the mountain. It would keep everything intact, the wildlife, the vegetation, the hardwood forest, Appalachian culture. There are many, many people here who spend a couple of months in the fall gathering ginseng, and ginseng is used for medicinal purposes. It's used for a lot of things, but there are people who for generations, as long as they could remember, spend a couple of months in the fall gathering ginseng. Ginseng now is around $1,100 a dry pound. And these people use the money that they get from their dry ginseng to buy Christmas presents for their families, or to buy major appliances for their homes, things that they couldn't normally take out of their regular budget. And we could still do that. Now, when the coal companies come in, they will gate off the property. You're not allowed on the property. But with the windmill farm, you could still have access to the property. You could still ginseng. You could still hunt. There are a lot of people throughout Appalachia that only eat deer meat. They don't eat any other type of meat, which is one of the healthiest meats you can eat. And so there's a lot of culture, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of our way of life that's tied up into these woods that they want to come in and destroy. Plus, this would offer, like I said, this would offer job diversity. This is a way that our relatives, the people that we love, our families, don't have to eat coal to make a living, and they don't have to die of black lung.
Lorella Scarborough is talking from what she knows. She lives there. We're talking about mountaintop removal, the future of energy in our country. Dave Cooper's in the studio, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the future of our energy, of energy in America. And Eric, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
I cannot help but really compliment how accurate this woman's account is of West Virginia. I'm a doctoral student of economics at West Virginia University. And I'm also an African-American male who's from Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the program for 2 years, been in West Virginia for three, and everything she says is on point. And it's interesting because to look at it contextually, West Virginia has been ranked as the least favorite state to do business in because the laws are the worst in terms of not being favorable towards business. And if you look at the court records even, when people sue businesses in West Virginia, typically it's the people who win, not the corporations. It's a fascinating situation there. And the only thing I can attribute it to is the fact that it seems as though West Virginia now has this politics of poverty, where poverty has become the brand. And anything the state can do to keep people in poverty so that the wealth is concentrated, it does. And all for the sake of being able to say, well, you know, we're one of the poorest states in the union. Let's get earmarks. Let's get money for education and some other things. It's a fascinating identity process to me.
So, Eric, I'm just curious before we let you go and go to our next caller and hear what our guests, Laurel and Dave, have to say in response to what you're saying. I'm curious, as an African-American man who is from Baltimore and spent time in West Virginia working on your doctorate, how do you make sure that a subject like this becomes relevant and gets related to the population we have here in urban Baltimore and the urban America, period?
How do we make it relevant to urban America?
Yeah.
Truthfully, that's a good question. Absent trying to ensure that we understand that education is the pathway, and as African Americans, especially as black men, giving ourselves permission to access education in some remote ways, and maybe looking at this collection of non-African American people demonstrate poverty in ways that are stereotypic to the way black people represent poverty, to realize that it's not a race thing, but it's a marketed identity, and then maybe grow from that.
Eric, thanks so much. I'm glad you called in. I appreciate you being part of the show today. Thank you. Any comments to what Eric was saying from Dave Laurel before we go to the next caller?
I think it's possible that in a state like West Virginia, where people have been under the thumb of out-of-state corporations for so many years, over 100,000 coal miners have died in the last century from black lung, that it is possible that the folks in West Virginia, when they get in the jury room and they have the chance to decide on the damages in a case where a corporation has injured somebody, they may have it may be payback time for 100 years of oppression. So that may be some explanation for why jury verdicts may be more severe in West Virginia.
410-319-8888. Daniel, on your cell, you're on the air.
Yeah, I appreciate what all of the speakers are talking about, and I guess I look at it, a lot of things under one, and I put them in one little basket, and that is a lack of vision. And at this point in our juncture, whether you're from Appalachia, Baltimore City, or Pebble Beach, I mean, we're in the same basket where we can't think the way we did anymore. Not only does this coal, it doesn't just apply to that form of energy, but where is our mission? At one point, we had a president that said, we're going to be on the moon. And we followed through on that. Well, mm-hmm. where is the same vision that says, hey, auto industry, energy industry, this is our plan for you. In 20 years, we will be using 15% of the coal. All the automobiles purchased will have at least 95% domestic materials in them to supply jobs, because I just freaked out when I understood that in order to bailout for GM, we've got to deal with the Columbia thing. And I'm thinking, you know, somebody in leadership used to say Americans first. You know, I'm an African-American man, but I can appreciate exactly what she's saying about West Virginia, because it all boils down to something Gil Scott-Heron said quite a while back. If not me now, I must be next.
Daniel, that's a really very important point. And I think, Laurella, I'd like you to comment back to Daniel, if you would. And we can maybe talk a little bit here before time's out about the whole idea of green jobs, the part of Barack Obama's campaign and other people in Congress saying that's just where we have to go. But, Laurella, go ahead. Laurella, you there? Did we lose Laurella?
I'm here.
Oh, go
I'm
ahead.
Here.
I'm sorry, love. Can you? There's a little feedback here.
Okay. Daniel's still talking.
I don't think so. I think there's some feedback from somewhere else.
I think they're both absolutely right. Eric and Daniel both. I think there definitely is a politics of poverty in the state of West Virginia. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
I think that throughout Appalachia, Appalachians are, we're invisible. We're invisible people, and as long as they don't have to acknowledge that we're here, it's okay for them to continue the destruction. And as far as the lack of vision, you know, Daniel's absolutely right. We have to have a vision, and I believe that we do have to start today
creating green jobs. Barack Obama has promised to create green jobs. There's a movement across the nation called Green for All, which we are glad to be a part of, which is advocating green jobs across the nation. When we were at PowerShift 2007 in Washington, D.C. last November, there was a sea of green hard hats on the lawn of the Capitol. And we're advocating green jobs in every way that we can possibly get them, you know, not just through the wind farm, but through solar, through hydro, through geothermal, through any type of green job, renewable energy that we can possibly get so we can phase out coal.
Really important point. Go ahead, Dave Cooper.
Mark, I was recently in Muncie, Indiana, which is where Ball State University is, and they had just landed a factory that's going to be creating these enormous generators that are used on these wind turbines. The people in Muncie were ecstatic because this is the kind of machinery that they already know how to do. It's Indiana with its declining auto business. The wind turbines in places like Detroit and Indiana, where they already have the machining skills, the steel, the know-how, can create hundreds and thousands of new jobs. We just have to have the vision to start looking at wind turbines as an opportunity.
And the other thing that Al Gore was writing about the other day is that you can have the wind turbines, but we have to rebuild the grid here in America so we can transfer the energy from places like Wyoming and West Virginia that could build these in Western Maryland and offshore, and they could bring that electricity to the rest of the country. And that's another piece that they all have to be connected here.
And I just wish that the West Virginia politicians could look at these at the tremendous opportunity that these wind turbines are offering. Instead, here's Congressman Alan Mollahan from northern West Virginia talking about wind turbines. He said, "I believe there's nothing more beautiful than my West Virginia hills, but I don't need windmills to re-landscape God's glory and my West Virginia hills."
And we have about a minute left, Lorella. You want to respond to the congressman?
Well, I'm concerned when Congressman Mollahan talks about God's creations, why he's not considering the people that are being sacrificed in the coal fields of southern West Virginia.
Let's hope we have this debate in a very strong way here in the coming months. And we will, clearly, when we talk to our area congressmen as we bring them on this program, this will be one of the issues we will bring up. We'll continue this conversation because it has to happen here and everywhere else. And LaRose Scarborough has been one of our guests. Go to www.coalriverwind.org to see her work and the work of the people in her community. She's a community organizer for the Coal River Mountain Watch and the Coal River Wind Farm Project. Lorella, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Stay safe and stay strong, and we'll stay in touch.
All right. Thanks a lot.
It's always great to talk to you.
Okay. Bye-bye. See you, Dave.
Take care. And Dave, Bye-bye. Thank you for being with us. And Dave's website is mountainroadshow.com. And let me encourage you all to go to ilovemountains.org. Plug in your zip code. See how this all relates to you on an everyday basis. So you can do that. You can also go to our website. And we have all this information up there as well as steinershow.org. And you can see everything you need to see right there. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Estate Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. More information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Interns are Judith Lloyd, Stavros Halkias, and Charles Harris. Theme music by Paul Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show, to podcast any of our past shows, and additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.